I am reading in Proverbs chapter 9, and invite you to turn there too. Let's read the alternating verses. I'll begin. Wisdom has built her house. She has hewn her seven pillars. She has sent out her young women to call from the highest places in the town. Come, eat of my bread and drink of the wine I have mixed. Whoever corrects a scoffer gets himself abuse, and he who reproves a wicked man incurs injury. Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be still wiser. Teach a righteous man, and he will increase in learning. For by me your days will be multiplied, and years will be added to your life. The woman folly is loud, she is seductive and knows nothing. Calling to those who pass by, who are going straight on their way. Stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. May God add to this reading of his word.
This winter green and white invitation that I have begins like this. The weather outside is frightful, but our wedding will be delightful. Let it snow. Jessica Ng, Alan Hayton, together with our parents, invite and request the presence of your honor, request the honor of your presence as we exchange our marriage vows before Christ. Saturday, 2nd of March, 2013, 4:30 in the afternoon. I thought that was a rather neat way to start the wedding invitation for winter. Then I have another wedding invitation. This one's a little different. It's a little booklet. It's just like your passport. Coat of arms on the front. Inside they have some immigration stamps. And Adrian Liu and Christopher Pui have put their picture and their name and the date of the wedding, August 8th, 2008, the time and the location of it, and set it all up just like the very first page on your passport. Again, another unique and interesting way to invite someone to your wedding. The text that you just read with Peter has two invitations in it. Two invitations to two very different meals, to eat with two very different ladies. And the invitations are quite serious. They're quite significant. You eat and choose to eat with the one lady, you get to live. You choose to eat with the other one, you go to the house of the dead. You go to where the dead are. You die. But before we look at these two invitations, a word of context is in order. As I've explained, as we've looked at the few messages or chapters or portions of Proverbs in the last couple months, the book of Proverbs is an anthology of seven collections. seven collections of wisdom sayings. And the first collection is from chapters 1 through to chapter 9. It's different than the other collections. This first collection, which is what has been our text for the last couple months, has 12 different poems in it, and they're cohesive, they're long sayings, and they fit together and they run together in thought. Whereas the other collections, starting in chapter 10, they all have these little short sayings, pithy sayings, wise sayings, and they jump all over the place for their topics. But now that we are at chapter 9 of the first collection, that means we're at the end. This is the end of the first collection. Therefore, chapter 9 is the climax. It's the conclusion of the first section, or the first collection of wise sayings. Though this wisdom teaching is for anyone, even the wise, even those who already have knowledge and understanding and discernment, the main setting of this first collection has been a father teaching his son. And the son is representative for all young people. All young people in the process of leaving the family home, going out on their own, starting and choosing their lifestyle, their way of life, their character that they're going to develop over the rest of their life. And the father, the wise, the elders have taught them through these chapters. They have been warned, they have warned the son. They've warned the young. They've warned the youth. Watch out for the violent. Watch out for the sexual immoral. They will take you down paths, down lifestyles and choices of life that will end in death. Here's the right path. Here's the way of wisdom. It starts with the knowledge of God, the knowledge of the Holy One, the fear of God. By chapter 9, as we've come to now, those two different lifestyles, those two different ways of life, those two different paths have been made clear. So now chapter 9 calls for the son, calls for us to make a choice. You know the paths, make a choice, because you shall walk on one of them. In order to do this, to present this choice, it's done through a literary technique called personification. You see it all the time around you. I have an example of personification on the screen. You see it, Winnie the Pooh and Piglet. Bears and pigs do not get along and give gifts to each other at Christmas. They don't wear Santa Claus hats and scarves. That's giving human attributes, human characteristics to animals. And that's what personification is. It's where you give impersonal objects, animals, abstract ideas, a human personality or a human characteristic. And Proverbs and Psalms is full of personification, where objects and ideas are made out or presented as human characters. And in Proverbs chapter 9, the abstract idea of wisdom and foolishness and the choice that the son has to make between choosing a course of life that is wise and the course of life that is foolish, that choice is presented as two human characters, two women with whom he is going to choose to dine with. From the similarities of the invitations, it becomes clear that these two ladies are in strong competition. They're rivals. They're not friends. They're rivals. This is revealed through the similarities of the invitations, where you see that they are inviting and calling out to the same people. It says in verses 4 and verse 16 that they both are calling out to the simple. Turn in here. Come and accept my invitation, says both Lady Wisdom and Madame Folly. Now, who are the simple? We looked at that concept a few weeks ago, the simple, the wise, and the fool. The simple are the naive, the immature, those who have not yet lived very long. They don't have very much experience in life. They don't have a lot of understanding. Basically, it's your youth. They still have yet or are in the process of choosing their course of life. This is the simple. But Lady Wisdom and Madame Folly, they also call to the wise. Verse 9, Lady Wisdom seeks to make the wise more wiser. Madame Folly, verse 15, seeks to lure some off the straight path. It mentions those who are on the straight path, and Lady Wisdom says, come off, come and turn into my house. The ladies are calling from the same locations, their homes and the high point, the visible public place of the towns. They also offer a dining experience. And the initial part of the invitation, verse 4 and 16, is the same. So you see from these similarities and who they're going after and how they're presenting themselves, they're rivals. They are competing. But beyond these four similarities, there are four very significant differences that emerge when you look at these invitations a little more carefully. The first major difference between the two ladies is substance. Did you notice the difference in the character of the two ladies as you read through that text? Their character is light and day difference. Lady Wisdom is industrious. She is building this, well, it's not quite a palace, but she's building a magnificent house. Seven pillars indicates a huge room and in a huge area. And why does she build this large and magnificent house like most people today, so that they have something to live in and they can show it off for themselves? That's why they build their large houses. That's why most people build large houses for themselves. No, she's not building this and going to all this expense and all this work to build the house for herself. She says in the text she's building it so she can invite people there and teach them and train them and give them understanding and discernment. She's building it so she has a place to teach and help others and educate others. Even the meal is from her own resources. She works hard to prepare this sumptuous, rich meal. And then she organizes her servants to go out. She says, go on out and invite more people. This is Lady Wisdom, an industrious lady, a lady who cares about others and gives of herself and pours her heart and her resources into these things. What a lady. In contrast, Madame Folly sits somewhat lazily at the door of her house. Compared to the wine and the meat of Lady Wisdom's meal, Madame Folly offers bland water and bread, and that not even of her own. That bread and water she's offering isn't hers. It's contraband. It's stolen. She says, come. Stolen water is sweet. I've got some delicacies for you. I stole them. It's not even from herself. Madame Folly is revealed in verse 13 as loud, boisterous, seductive. She covers up her lack of substance by being loud and boisterous. She covers up her lack of substance, her lack of quality, her lack of character by turning up her volume. She's a loudmouth. That's how she drowns out and distracts people from the fact that actually, if you look at her, she has no real good character. She has nothing of substance to offer. She just turns up the volume and repetition, making such a din the truth is drowned out. I found it rather interesting when one of my daughters was explaining to me and telling me about group work at school, and how when some people in the group tried to present a reasoned and logical explanation and defense and gave evidence for a certain point of view, those who had a different view that didn't have really much evidence or substance, they didn't listen and didn't want to listen to the evidence of the other view. Instead, what they did, they wanted to hold on to their own wrong opinion or view. And all they did, she said, was turn up the volume. They just got louder. They just shouted over everybody else. That's primary school. They continued to hold and advance and sway others in the group of their errant view simply by increasing their volume and repeating it again and again. That's Lady Wisdom. The loudest voice, or the most frequently heard voice, or the most frequently heard message is not usually or often the right one. Sometimes that's just a cover-up for a lack of substance, a lack of character, a cover-up of that which is false. And then additionally to volume, Madame Folly adds seduction. She diverts people's attention from the lack of her substance by saying, I got some special pleasures for you. I got something that's forbidden. Come and taste it. I got a thrill for you. And through that false promise, again, she hides the lack of her substance. This brings us to the second major difference, knowledge. It says in verse 13, she knows nothing. Of course she knows nothing. She hasn't got any substance. She's ignorant. She has no more insight into life and the living of life than the people she's seeking to teach or to lead. She has no more insight than the simple. And if people accept her teaching, her advice, at best what her advice is meaninglessness. It has no use. At worst, at most, if you accept her advice, it brings you harm. It hurts you, destroys you. There's nothing good from Madame Folly. She's ignorant. She knows nothing. In contrast, Lady Wisdom, verse 6, offers true insight. Verse 9, she offers an increase in learning. And verse 10, she offers the knowledge of God. She has knowledge. Lady Wisdom does. Big difference. Another simple difference, but major difference, is the outcome of the meal. Lady Wisdom's meal enhances life. It brings life. Verse 11, well, consuming contraband with Madame Folly brings one to the realm of death, in Hebrew, as it says there, called Sheol. The fourth major difference is the requirement. You have to do something to eat with these ladies. Each lady has a requirement to dine with them. Ladies' Wisdom requirement is to leave the path or the life of the simple. Leave the path of the simple. And to come into her house and accept correction. Admit you're wrong. Receive her instruction and the knowledge of God, verses 6 through 10. That's what you need to do if you are going to receive knowledge and wisdom from Lady Wisdom. If you want to eat with Madame Folly, you have to leave the straight path, verse 15 and 17, and join her on crooked paths. You have to join her in immoral pursuits if you want to eat with her. These two women are competitors, and they will not tolerate us eating in both houses. It's one or the other. Because both paths are going to take a person in opposite directions. Both meals will take people to opposite destinies. So these hostesses do not tolerate our being on the other lady's path, which is incompatible with their own. So they have a requirement. We can only be in one house at a time, at one meal at a time. Now these requirements bring us to the middle section. So there's two invitations, and they're separated by a middle section, verses 7 to 12. And this middle section is addressed to those who are actually going to be going out and giving the teaching of Lady Wisdom, to those who are actually going to be doing the instruction of Lady Wisdom's message. Earlier, she called them her maidens that she sends out into the city or into the town. Well, in reality, when you take away the personification, and the reality is these people who are going to be doing the teaching are the elders, the parents, the teachers of the society, the people who have understood how God wants us to live and what His design is for our life. So she has some instruction for those people. She says, when you go out and you teach wisdom, my message of wisdom, you're going to be teaching two types of people and you can expect two different types of responses. So from the humble, those are the first group of people that you will find. They are willing to leave their simple ways. They're willing to be corrected. And you, teacher of wisdom, parent of wisdom, you will receive acceptance, submission, and gratitude. Verses 8b to 9. Now this teaches us an important point. If we want to grow wise in how to understand life and what life is all about, and understand how we have been designed to live, then we have to acknowledge wisdom and instruction comes from outside ourselves. In verse 10, it says it starts with the fear or the knowledge of God. So we looked at that concept a few weeks ago, the fear of the Lord. The beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord. That's the starting line. If anyone wants to become wise, anyone wants to understand what life is about, if anyone wants to understand their place in life, if anyone wants to know what the meaning of life is and the purposes of life are, you must start at that starting point. There is no other starting point. So knowledge and wisdom comes from outside ourselves. And so we have to acknowledge we've erred. We have to acknowledge that we're ignorant. We have to acknowledge and be ready to receive correction and instruction and understanding. And the other response is from the scoffer or the mocker. You receive hostility and rejection. This response of the mocker or the scoffer is more than simply being ignored. It's more than someone just not listening to you. But as verses 7b and 8a note, it's an act of aggression. It's an act of repulsion. It's a hatred. Why this response? Well, if you go back to chapter 1, verse 7b and chapter 1, verse 29, it says there that the mocker, the scoffer, the fool hates wisdom. It hates knowledge and understanding. They do not have any fear of God. So they don't like what we're teaching. They don't like what Lady Wisdom has to offer. They don't like and do not want to receive what the teachers of wisdom are offering. They hate that message, therefore they hate the messenger, and they take it out on the messenger. So the teacher of wisdom needs to be prepared to receive hostile reactions, and also needs to have discernment when to move on to the next person. Jesus spoke of that dynamic in Matthew 7, verse 6. He says, don't cast your pearls before swine. In Matthew 10, 12 to 15, he told the disciples, if you go into one village and they don't want to listen to you, shake your sandals off to them, the dust off your sandals towards them as a sign of rejection, and leave them. Move on to someone else. So there's the chapter, simply explained. A few thoughts to ponder, to act upon, and conclude. Four thoughts. First of all, as we come to the end of this first collection of wisdom in Proverbs, we've worked through the basics of what it means to be wise, what it means to be a fool, what wisdom is, what wisdom is not. And therefore, we use that understanding of those terms and concepts to properly interpret the terms wise and fool, etc., in the rest of the book. Consider the very next verse, chapter 10, verse 1. You move into the second collection. These are the short, pithy sayings of Solomon. So it says, chapter 10, verse 1, the Proverbs of Solomon, "A wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish son is sorrow to his mother." So what does it mean? He's a wise son or a foolish son? Well, we don't start interpreting our own understanding and our own ideas of what it means to be wise or foolish into these verses. We don't all of a sudden think, oh, okay, wise. Well, it means he's able to do some practical things, and foolish, he'd made some bad choices, or he's acting rather dumb. No. What was wisdom? What was foolishness? As explained in the first 9 chapters, and you take that meaning and put it into what it means to be a wise son. Tremper Longman summarizes this point well. We now recognize the theological meaning of a verse like this, and he's referring to chapter 10, verse 1. It states that a son who makes a father glad is wise. To be wise means that one acts like one who is in relationship with God. On the contrary, those who bring sorrow to the mother show themselves to be fools. That means they're acting like worshipers of pagan deities. End of quote. So in other words, a wise son is someone who obviously has started at the right starting place, the fear of the Lord. He has a relationship with God. The foolish son is someone who's rejected the fear of the Lord, rejected the knowledge of the Holy One. He's living like however he pleases, without instruction and insight from God. That's a foolish son that brings grief to the mother. So that's the first thing that we need to remember and act upon, having looked at many parts of chapters 1 through 9. The second thing that we need to be aware of is that both God and demons are calling and inviting you. Behind Lady Wisdom ultimately is God. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 9, and chapter 9, verse 10 make that clear. There's no way we can become wise without a positive relationship with God. The starting point, the beginning of wisdom, is knowledge of the Holy One. You don't start there, you can't be wise. So ultimately, behind wisdom is what? God. Without submission to God and acknowledging God as the supreme being, our creator and our judge, we will have no wisdom. And the greatest expression of wisdom is what? In the New Testament, 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 24 to 30, and Colossians 2:3, the greatest expression of wisdom is Jesus, the Christ, the Messiah. It speaks of him having all the wisdom of God and being all the wisdom from God. So to submit to God and his designs and purposes for our life through repentance and faith in Jesus Christ, then we'll understand our place in life. Then we'll understand what life is about and meaning of life and purpose of life is all about. And we'll experience real life. Behind the personification of Madame Folly is the devil. The anti-God system of the world that's headed up by Satan, the fallen angel. In Acts chapter 13, verses 14 to 13, Barnabas and Paul are teaching the word of God to a Cyprian ruler or a proconsul called Sergius Paulus. And they're explaining to him the ways of God, the wisdom of God. And it's simultaneously, Acts chapter 13 and those verses explain, there is someone opposing Paul, opposing Barnabas, contradicting the message of wisdom that they're giving. His name was Bar-Jesus. He was a false Jewish prophet. And he's trying to sway the proconsul away from what Paul and Barnabas are teaching, the truth, and from wisdom. And this is what Paul said to Bar-Jesus in verse 10 of Acts 13. "You son of the devil, you enemy of all righteousness, full of all deceit and villainy, will you not stop making crooked the straight paths of the Lord?" Listen to the language. Full of deceit and villainy, making crooked the straight paths, enemy of all righteousness. That just sounds like Madame Folly. Sounds like the fools in Proverbs. That's exactly what they do. To be the son of someone is to act and behave like them. So Paul's saying, Bar-Jesus, you're acting just like Satan. You're acting just like the devil. And he's doing so by opposing righteousness, brimming with deceit and villainy, and twisting, bending God's straight paths. Actions that match Madame Folly. So you have to understand and realize that in life, you're being called to by both God and the devil. You're receiving invitations from both of them. Whose are you going to receive? Whose are you going to reject? Then third, accepting ladies' wisdom invitation reverses the rebellion of Adam and Eve returning to God's design for life, while accepting Madame Folly's invitation is to remain in rebellion, condemnation, and the destiny of death. When God created the universe and everything in it, he created it all good. And when he created Adam and Eve, the first humans, they were good. They were innocent, without any fault or mistake or flaw. And everybody and everything got along well in harmony. Perfect environment, full of harmony. Then in Genesis chapter 3, you know what happened. Most of you know what happened. They received a visitor from a fallen angel. The ancient serpent, Revelation calls the devil. And he said, "Adam and Eve, God's lying to you. All this wonderful, perfect environment that you see, it's just a mirage to keep you from becoming all that you can be. Because if you eat of that tree that God told you not to eat of, you will become like God." God's suppressing you. He's keeping you from all that you can be. Go eat of the tree and you will be like God. You will know what good and evil is. You can decide for yourself what good and evil is, what right and wrong is. You can be in charge of your own life. Sadly, they listened to that lie. And ever since then, we have been suffering for it. The world is broken and full of pain and evil and suffering. So the wise person, the person who has been instructed by Lady Wisdom, they understand that, and they reject the lie of Satan. They reject what Adam has done, and they turn back to the truth. The wise acknowledge God is God. They acknowledge that he made the world and he made us to function in certain ways. And that includes a moral order for which we are held accountable to. And so the wise come back and say, no more of this rebellion. No more of going our own way. No more of our determining what is right or wrong. We submit to God. We were wrong. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. That's where we'll start. We'll recognize him and Lady Wisdom teach us. We submit. We'll accept rebuke for the wrong we've done. We'll receive instruction to discern and live as God has intended. And we'll follow those ways. That's essentially what's going on. If we accept Lady Wisdom's invitation, we're reversing the rebellion of Adam and Eve. But to receive and accept Madame Folly's invitation is to continue to believe the lie of the serpent, joining her, trying to establish life apart from God and outside his design of life, which is death. That's why her house is where the dead are. And you become dead if you eat in her house. And then fourth and lastly, be aware you and I will respond to one of the two invitations, eating at the two homes. There's no third option. You can't hear this from the scriptures and say, well, I don't like either option. I'd like option C, please. There is no option C. This is where we have to drop the whole personification thing that the author has presented the choice in. We need to remember that this invitation to the dinner and the food is actually representing the choice of our lifestyle, the choice of our course of life. So you can't opt out of a choice of a course of life. And this choosing of our lifestyle, our course of life, includes our character, our conduct, and the consequences of that life that we shall bear. So we can't say no. There's no third option. You and I, as we live our lifestyles, we will be eating at one of the two homes, walking one of the two paths. The question is just which path are we walking on? Which house are we eating? Which food are we eating? Who's instructing us, Lady Wisdom or Madame Folly? And considering the radical outcome of either eternal death or eternal life, we need to really pay attention to this. We'd better examine our life and our choices carefully. We come to the end of our short study of Proverbs. We haven't covered everything, of course, even within the first collection of chapters 1 to 9. But we come to the end for now. We'll have a Christmas message next week and then move into something different in the new year. But as we end this study, let us heed Lady Wisdom. Let us take up her invitation. Let us go back to the beginning, to the right starting point if we've gotten off the path. God is gracious. He always invites us back, no matter what crooked path we've got on, no matter where we've got ourselves mired down and messed up and half dead. He's the God of the resurrection. He can bring us back onto his straight paths. But you do have to choose. You do have to desire it. You do have to want to come back and walk on the right path and to be humble, to be corrected, and to be willing to receive God's instruction. I'd encourage you and myself to stay on the path of Lady Wisdom, to stay on her home, and to feast. It will bring life.